Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
He kōna e purangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
Hi and welcome to Eating Fried Chicken in the Shower bonus episode. I'm joined in the shower today by clinical psychologist Saab Jahal.
Kia ora, James.
Kia ora, brother. I want to talk to you about work culture because I think it's a term I've heard, but I'm a solo performing artist. So I don't really know much about, even with Radio New Zealand, all I do is put on a robe, as you know, sit in the shower, but they keep me away from everyone else. So how do we create a healthy work culture?
Okay, so let's start off with a definition of culture. And work culture is a self-sustaining pattern of behavior that basically tells you how things are done.
Okay.
With an organization, okay? And so these things are constantly self-renewing and they're slowly evolving. And what you can't do is to come into an organization and say, you guys are doing these things all wrong, and I would like you to do it this way, and I'm going to slap up my values on the wall and tell you all these messages, and if you just change how you think, then everything will be different and everything will be better. That's not how it works.
Right. Because that does seem to be, I think, when we read news stories or if you watch a film about they came in and they changed it, that's normally the montage, isn't it?
Yeah. And that happened at Enron.
Right.
And we know what happened there.
Yes.
So what you actually do is that you focus on behavior.
Okay.
And actually you act in a way that then changes your mindset rather than the other way around. So by changing small key behaviors and how you do things, then as you start to see the benefit of that, then the bigger shifts start taking place in terms of how people think and believe about different things in that organization. It's all based upon small changes in behavior.
Is that frustrating, like in terms of the speed, because often we talk about the culture needs to change, but small steps usually means a slower journey.
It depends on who's making those steps.
Aha.
Right? So if you can identify key leaders, key influencers within your organization, and they are demonstrably physically and publicly making those changes in their behavior, and people look at them as leaders within the organization. And don't confuse that with people who have authority, right?
Uh-huh.
These are the people who lead, that people who respect and people who are connected with. If they start making these changes, then you would be surprised how rapidly that behavior change starts to take root within an organization. The mistake is that people talk a lot.
Mm.
And they don't necessarily follow the talk with the action. It's the action that people pay attention to.
Speaking of action, what is the appeal of sport? Because it seems to me New Zealand is a sporting nation, whether we like it or not. We throw ourselves all in. The national psyche, we always say, is tied up to sport. Like, what is it about sport that really speaks to us?
That's a really interesting question. I don't think we're probably the only nation, but we do seem particularly tied into the whole sporting journey. And I will say journey because I think one of the giveaways here is that if you look at how sports TV, sports broadcasting has changed over the last few years, you'll probably see as many shots of people's faces, the athletes' faces, as they're performing or after a key event has happened, as you will as the action actually of the actual sport going on the field or the court or wherever it's going on. It's the athlete's face because it's the emotional journey. It's the emotional connection that I think has become increasingly important.
So we're investing part of ourselves. You know, I'm a sports fan, so, you know, I'm invested in the journey of the team. But you're saying it's actually evolved that we become invested in the journey of the players as well?
Absolutely. I think it's the moment-to-moment journey at a micro level as to like how this game is unfolding. Right. And that's why I think we become so attracted and engaged with what's going on in the field at the same time. But if we look at something, you know, we can be following a team that only 30 years ago last won the English Premiership Championship like Liverpool have done, and suddenly all these six-year-old, seven-year-old fans who I used to know at the time are suddenly like, oh, yeah, I was a Liverpool fan back in the day. It's that long, you know. So people have, and they are emotionally invested, I think, in a team's journey and that identity as well. And I think that goes for many New Zealanders as well in terms of how dominant sport and that conversation is. It's a way that people connect emotionally.
I just want to say to you, as a lifelong Manchester United fan, I am deeply offended that you have dropped Liverpool's premiership win into my podcast. That's fine, Osab. That's fine. Let me say though, like I have said that as a fan, and fans, I apologize for or listeners, I apologize for getting so specific into the English Premier League. But if you're a fan of football, you had to like Liverpool winning this year. It was well deserved. But the flip side of that is, of course, Manchester United lost a big, but it doesn't seem to feel as bad. I say that as a fan. And likewise, when the All Blacks lost the World Cup last year, it didn't seem to feel as bad as it had in the past. What does losing do to us when we're invested in sport?
I think there's an interesting lesson here in that if you look at what the good coaches do and how they treat wins and also how they treat losses, is that they tend not to make a big deal out of, you know, big winning streaks, you know, this many wins we've had in a row. Actually, what they focus on is the team's journey and what they've learned and what they've developed and developing that team culture that we talked about earlier on. And I think that that's the really important thing to bear in mind with losing too. It's what can we get out of this experience? Because yes, it's binary, we win or we lose, but actually the nuance of how the game unfolded, there are often positives to be taken from that. And actually there are positives to be taken to in analysing and understanding why it is that that team lost. And then changing those behaviours rather than saying, oh, we must do this, we must do that, but changing behaviours as to how do you respond to that loss, where the growth opportunity is. And then you can use that loss in a way that actually benefits and becomes part of that team's journey, just as it becomes part of the spectator's journey as well. It's the up and down emotional roller coaster that comes from being involved in sport, whether you're playing it or watching it.
So basically, it's not whether you win or lose, it's how you play the game.
It totally is.
A tale as old as time, song as old as rhyme. Clinical psychologist Saab Jahel, thank you very much.
Kia ora, James.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.